The reading this morning is from the book of Joshua, chapter 2, verses 1 to 20. Then Joshua secretly sent out two spies from the Israelite camp of Acacia Grove. He instructed them, "Scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho." So the two men set out and came to the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there that night. But someone told the king of Jericho, "Some Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land." So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, "Bring out the men who have come into your house, for they have come here to spy out the whole land." Rahab had hidden the two men, but she replied, "Yes, the men were here earlier, but I didn't know where they were from. They left the town at dusk as the gates were about to be closed. I don't know where they went. If you hurry, you probably can catch up with them." Actually, she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them beneath bundles of flax she had laid out. So the king's men went looking for the spies along the road leading to the shallow crossings of the River Jordan. And as soon as the king's men had left, the gate of Jericho was shut. Before the spies went to sleep that night, Rahab went up on the roof and talked to them. "I know the Lord has given you this land," and she told them, "and we are all afraid of you. Everyone in the land is living in terror, for we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. And we know that what you did in Shechem and Og and the two Amorite kings east of the River Jordan, whose people you completely destroyed. No wonder our hearts have melted in fear. No one has the courage to fight after hearing such things. For the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and the earth below. Now swear to me by the Lord that you will be kind to me and my family, since I have helped you. Give me some guarantee that when Jericho is conquered, you'll let me live along with my father and mother and brothers and sisters and all their families. We offer our own lives as a guarantee for your safety," the man agreed. "If you don't betray us, we will keep our promise and be kind to you when the Lord gives us the land." Then, since Rahab's house was built in the town wall, she let them down by a rope through the window. "Escape to the hill country," she told them. "Hide there for 3 days from the men searching for you. Then when they have returned, you can go on your way." Before they left, the men told her, "We will be bound by the oath we have taken only if you follow these instructions. When we come into the land, you must leave this scarlet rope hanging from the window through which you let us down. And all your family members, your father, mother, brothers, and all your relatives must be inside the house. If they go out into the street and are killed, it will not be our fault. But if anyone lays a hand on people inside this house, we will accept the responsibility for their death. If you betray us, however, we are not bound by this oath in any way." Amen.
Night had fallen, and she waited. The sounds and the shouts and the sounds of marching boots told her she'd been right. She wiped damp palms on a scrap of cloth and waited. Moments later, bang, 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 came the heavy-handed hammering at the door. The young woman in the dimly lit room behind the barred doorway shook her head and sighed. Hatred flickered for a moment in her eyes as she stood, taking a deep breath. The face she showed the world took its place once more. "Open in the name of the king." "Been there, done that, doesn't pay," she muttered under her breath as she went to the door, cursing loudly at ruffians who have no respect for respectable business women. She called out in her business voice, "Get along there or I'll call the watch." "Shut up, Rahab, we know you. Either open this door or we will." The scorn in his voice just hardened her resolve. "And if I don't, well, with you gone, who's going to feed your family, that pretty little sister of yours?" Threat made her heart jump. The thought of her little sister forced to make a living the same way. All right, give me a moment. She lifted the bar free of its bracket. The door was shoved roughly from open from without by two armed men, knocking her to the floor. In the guttering torchlight, she saw the alleyway was crowded with soldiers. The leader grabbed her by the hair, lifting her to her toes, shoving his scarred face up close, demonic in the flickering torchlight. Men started searching the rooms. Where are they? Two men were seen entering these premises this afternoon. I'll not ask you again. Where are they? She felt the coldness of a blade against her throat. Which men? She replied with a lift of an eyebrow. He laughed, looking her up and down. Yes, I can understand you might lose count. Two men, foreigners, Hebrews. They crossed the river upstream this morning. Enemies, spies, come to search out the land. To harbour them is treason. Well, I didn't know who they were. They left at dusk, just before the gates closed. Must have gone out with the crowd. Maybe if you go after them, you'll catch them. Probably on their way back to the river. The other guards returned. No one here. The leader kept Rahab pinned to the wall by her throat, staring her in the eyes as he asked his men, what about the roof? We looked. There's nothing up there but retted flax drying. It stinks. He looked at Rahab in surprise. Flax? She looked back at him. Yes, flax, I'm changing profession. But it hasn't hurt me anything yet. A girl's still got to eat. He let her go, shaking a finger in her face, if you're lying. He left the threat hanging, signalled the rest of his men and the squad, and jogged off down the street. Rahab watched them go. She spat into the street behind them, and she watched them round the corner, heard them calling the gate guards to open up. Closing the door with shaking hands, she dropped the latch bar back into place. Back against the door, she slid into a crouch, clutching herself and shaking. What have I done? She whispered. That might be one way of imagining it, like a scene from perhaps a 1950s Technicolor biblical epic like The Ten Commandments or The Robe, a Cecil B. DeMille spectacular with a cast of thousands. But if you read the story closely, it doesn't quite fit. Rahab's really the only fleshed out character in the story. The spies are nondescript and rather inept. Go spy out the land, especially Jericho, they're told. But what do? Well, they do what many young men would do the first time they're let off the leash. They go looking for a good time. Then there's the soldiers. They bumble about, chasing shadows. Again, they're pretty ineffectual. In some ways, it reads more like some kind of old silent comedy. Laurel and Hardy like spies, Keystone Cop like soldiers, and over it all, calm, crafty and assured, Rahab stealing the scene, like a Mary Pickford or Lillian Gish. But who was Rahab? Her name means broad or wide, perhaps hinting towards generous. And like some Bond girls, her name is pretty suggestive considering her profession. Some commentators have tried to fudge things by refusing to admit what the text so plainly tells us. But she wasn't an innkeeper. She was a woman who, like so many even today, was forced to use the only talents and assets she had in order to make a living. Rahab was a prostitute. Today's parlance, a sex worker. There were two kinds of prostitute in Canaan then. The cult priestesses who worked in the temples and the street women who worked for cash. The priestesses had a place within society and some honour. The street girls were looked on just the same then as they are now. They were rejected, ridiculed, despised, unclean, bad girls. And just like today, most of them probably had no choice. The Hebrew word is zuna. The Greek is porne. Both words are harsh as curses and often were. Harlot is the old English word. Rahab the harlot. Why then did I portray her as someone who was trying to change her situation? Well, the text does talk about her hiding spies on the roof under bundles of flax. Now, that's the plant from which linen is made. And linen was an important cloth right the way up until cotton came to dominate about 300 years ago. We still call where we keep our sheets and our cloths linen cupboards. Linen wears well. It softens as it wears. It has a cool feel, almost like wearing your own climate control system. And it's an ideal material for hot climates, especially for clothing worn against the skin. It doesn't itch like wool. But linen making isn't the kind of work that prostitutes do. For a start, it isn't good for the hands. It's time intensive, and you need the skills. And it was often horrible, slimy, smelly work. You see, after being harvested in March, wild flax was retted, which generally means tied into bundles and immersed in ponds for 2 weeks or so until the outer husk begins to rot and the gluten that holds the core together, which is where the fibres are found, starts to dissolve. So when it comes out of the pond, it's a slimy, rotting, stinking mess which needs to be laid out to dry before processing. It's a difficult smell to shift or to cover up with perfume. Rahab had flax drying on her roof. Lots of flax. Enough to hide two grown men beneath without them showing. Maybe she was going into linen making. Maybe they were starting up a new family business and based themselves at her old business address. The roof would be handy for flax drying, and it wouldn't have been used for her other trade. Rahab dreamt of a better life for herself and for her family. Her house was part of the wall. In some cases, when towns were first fortified, it was more of a case that you just fill in the gaps between the outer houses, reinforce them, thicken them, heighten them, add an extra story. Use those outer walls as the outer defences. And on those very outskirts of town, there were likely the poorest areas, where all the unsightly and the smelly businesses were located, downwind of the king's residence, where his toadies and his warband lived. Make no mistake, Rahab was a determined, a brave, intelligent, and a quick-witted young woman. Rabbinic tradition calls her one of the four most beautiful women in the ancient world. Maybe she was making enough to buy her way off the streets and into a more respectable trade. There's no mention of a husband or of children, only parents, siblings, and their families. Something had gone wrong somewhere in her life for her to end up on the streets. But she was smart enough to survive, and she was determined enough not to stay there. And I'm sure that she would have had no illusions about the society she was part of. Petty kings, little more than bandits really, lording it over those areas they managed to keep under their thumb. Think Calvera and his gang in the Magnificent Seven, and that's the 1969 one, not the rubbishy one they did more recently. Rahab was just one of those unfortunates who'd reaped the worst of it. And I'm sure she knew just how bad things were, living as she did on the fringes of society. It was no secret that the Israelites were coming. Since they'd escaped Egypt more than 40 years before, the stories of them would have grown with the telling. Jericho had escaped back then, braced for invasion. The enormous Israelite horde had for some reason retreated. But over the time since, terrible stories of them had trickled back to Jericho and the rest of Canaan. Stories of their successes in battle, of the utter destruction of those they defeated. It wouldn't be the first time that the poor and oppressed in one society looked with hope on their enemies as a better bet than their own leaders. And prostitutes, well, they get to hear it all. Soldiers, merchants, caravan guards, petty officials. The entire world of men passes through their doors. Men bursting with news or secrets to impress the women with, show how big and how important they are. But Rahab listened, learned, pondered. I'm sure the rumour mill was abuzz about the mighty horde poised just over the border, just over that horizon. Not just soldiers, but a nation on the move, looking for a home, and one whose mighty God had promised them the land in which she lived. The mighty God of Israel, who had humbled Egypt, who had given them victory time and time again, whoever came against them, had promised them her home. She was already planning a new life. So what thoughts might have been going through her mind? As a student of humanity, she would surely know that the fear that was rife within the city ensured its defeat by itself. And then, on that fateful day, hope came knocking on her door. Two men, looking a little furtive, obviously foreigners, damp clothing. And she knew, somehow she knew, this was it, crunch time. She let them in, knowing that someone would have noticed. Information has always been a commodity of high value. If someone had the price, someone would sell word that two crumpled-looking foreigners had entered her doors. But still, she took them in. And I'm sure these inept young spies would have talked as much as listened. It would be rude not to. Talked about their lives, their people, their God and what he'd done. And I'm sure they listened to Rahab, to other punters as they came and went. And I'm sure Rahab listened hard about God, about everyday life in the camp, about the mothers, wives, the daughters, and with each tale the certainty must have grown inside her. Something touched her heart. Even hardened as it was by her profession, hope blossomed in her. She'd have known it would only be time before the king would hear, that sooner or later his heavies would come calling. Somehow she knew it was time to put up or shut up. She knew that if she protected these men, if she could exert a promise from them, there was hope of a new life. Like the words of a promise, hope beckoned. Evening drew near, she told them of their fears, that if they'd only trust her, things would be all right. Looked at her with astonishment, thanking her with the blessings and prayers. You won't bless me when you see where you'll be hiding, she'd have laughed. But they were content to hide amongst the rotting, stinking flax in the gathering gloom up on her roof. Rahab descended to the rooms below where all her guests were received. And she waited. After the soldiers had gone, she returned to the roof and, bringing them back, spoke with the men at length. She told them that the country was ripe to fall in fear of their forces. She acknowledged the God of Israel as the supreme God of all, calling on his name. And she begged for her life and that of her family, knowing that it was in the hands of these two men to give or to deny. They agreed. After all, she could still have betrayed them. But where would that get her? They told her to identify her property with a scarlet cord and to stay inside with all her family. It's like that first Passover again, isn't it? Mark the house with red and stay inside whilst death comes calling. It's even the right time of year. Is this Rahab's exodus from Canaan into Israel? She let them down outside the walls and advised them to lay low in the hills until the search was called off. Maybe she'd had to do similar things before, helping smugglers or hiding married men from their wives. We can only imagine what it must have been like to endure the strange siege that followed. The Israelites marching silently round the city, day after day, no attack coming. How the fear must have grown and grown. How she must have doubted her agreement with the spies. How she must have feared she'd be denounced as a traitor by her neighbours. Traitor. Wasn't she a traitor to her land and her city? Was she supposed to be grateful and supportive of a regime that forced her into degradation and danger, looked down upon her, and then chose to demand patriotism at the end of a sword? No, the encounter with the king's guard would make her realise in Canaan she will always be Rahab the harlot. She could never rid herself of that label. The only way to lose it would be to throw in her lot with Israel and with their God. Maybe, just maybe, with Israel she'd be able to make a place for herself, maybe find a way to belong. You see, as Sonia mentioned, that's one of the main themes, not only of Rahab's story, but of the whole and the entire book of Joshua. One of the central questions it asks is, what qualifies someone to be a member of God's new people? Who's in? Who's out? The story of Rahab is the first of a number of stories that examine that very question. Whilst this story, the Rahab story, takes place, Joshua and the rest of the Israelites are in Acacia Grove, it was, on the reader. They're in Shittim, which is the very place where 40 years earlier the people stumbled by intermarrying with pagan locals, with pagan women, and we're told went whoring off after other gods. And what have the spies done? They've gone whoring off with a local prostitute. The Hebrew doesn't, you see, say stayed there as in lodging. It says they entered the house of the prostitute Rahab and lay down there. Join the dots. So the story is set up with Rahab, this broad, the wide open woman, a Canaanite who Deuteronomy says is anathema. It sets her up as just the kind of woman, guys, your mother told you or warned you about. But where does the story go? The story puts into her mouth exactly the words, exactly the confession of faith that you would hope to find on the lips of the most devout and racially pure Israelite. And she puts those words into practice. Later, chapter 7, we find another exploration of the same thing. Israel is defeated at the Battle of Ai. Lots are cast to determine who has disobeyed God's command to devote all that is taken to God. And the lot falls on Achan, a Hebrew amongst Hebrews, just the kind of person with just the lineage to be the ultimate insider. And yet it is he who brings defeat by his disobedience. Rahab, the ultimate outsider, shows by her actions and her words that she is a true daughter of God. While Achan, the ultimate insider, shows by his actions that he is not. Who's in? Who's out? Rahab might be the first Canaanite to become one of God's new people, but she certainly wasn't the last. How wide, how broad are the boundaries of God's kingdom? Wide enough, broad enough to include Rahab the harlot. Now, what we see in Rahab is the portrait of someone who knows that things aren't right, but who, instead of just bemoaning it and feeling inadequate, actively looks to find a way to change those things that she has influence over. If you'll excuse the pun, Rahab doesn't take things lying down. Being unjustly treated herself hasn't made her resort to the same in her relationships with others. What we see in Rahab is a person who is open to being used by God, someone who is open to seeing the possibilities he lays at her feet. The spies come to her door. I'm certain in the climate of the city that she would have known what their appearance signified. She could have denounced them. She could have refused them. But she didn't. She helped them. Somehow she sensed that God was at work in their appearance, and she chose to cooperate. That's the key. Even knowing the little that she did of the God of Israel, she could see and she could feel that light was coming. She chose to trust a God she didn't know because she understood, however dimly, that he deserved her allegiance. Rahab a Gentile, a Canaanite, a woman, and a prostitute. And yet not only did she choose God, God chose her. Not only to aid in the taking of Jericho and subsequently the whole land, but he gave her a major role in the bloodline of our Lord Jesus Christ. This beaten down, despoiled, despised toy of men was to become the source out of whom would spring the Saviour of the world. She was the muddy spring that's the source of the water of life. So how did things turn out for Rahab? Let's listen to a few selected verses from chapter 6. Joshua said to the two spies, "Keep your promise. Go to the prostitute's house and bring her out along with all her family." The men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, mother, brothers, and all of the other relatives who were with her. They moved her whole family to a safe place near the camp of Israel. So Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute and her relatives who were with her in the house because she had hidden the spies Joshua sent to Jericho. And she lives amongst the Israelites to this day. Rahab must have married into the people of God because Matthew records her as an ancestor of King David. Jewish law says she married Joshua. Maybe she married one of the spies, who knows? But she, a street girl from Jericho, becomes one of the ancestors of King David and in turn an ancestor of Jesus Christ. This lowly, defiled, brave young woman, a Gentile, is held up by both James and the author of the letter to the Hebrews as a hero of faith. A hero of Israel, an example to us all. Doesn't that just show how amazing is the love, the grace, and the inclusivity of our sovereign Lord? So what can we learn from Rahab that we can take from this story today? First, we've seen that if you're searching for God, even if that's not who or what you might think you're searching for, then he will show himself to you. Somehow, through someone or some circumstance. And if you grasp hold of that, he is faithful. And he will grasp hold of you in turn. Second, God can use you if you're willing. You may never know the results of what he does through you. But saying yes to him opens up possibilities of dizzying proportions. If he can use Rahab, he can use you, or me, or anyone. And you don't have to be perfect for that to happen. Because it's not about who you are, it's about who he is. And I think that's really reassuring. That it doesn't rely on us, it relies on him. Third, our past doesn't need to determine our future. Liz Curtis Higgs puts it this way in her book Bad Girls of the Bible. With God, she says, it isn't who you were that matters. It's who you're becoming. With God, you don't have to wait until you're good enough. He wants to take you as you are, warts and all. If that's where you are, then that's where the journey begins. He wants us to give ourselves entirely into his hands. And that includes all the good, but it also includes all the bad and all the ugly. And with it, God will make something beautiful. Who's in? Who's out? What choice will you make? Where do you choose to belong? Let's pray.